But welcome back to the home of explanations galore. You've got more than money. You've got Gene Dickinson, your host, your personal financial advisor. 780 years of experience. No, it's just one of life's mysteries. There's no explanation for that. Joining me in the studio this morning, Mr. Mark Balsack, Mr. Greg Grillo, financial advisors extraordinaire.
You know, if you break that word down, it's either extraordinaire or extraordinary. I mean,
well,
yeah. Trying okay. to figure out that hidden message there.
I think I'll just let him twist.
Is this mic on? We're on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's on. Everybody out there listening going, oh, yeah. It was on. Hey, it's done. Hey, in a couple weeks, just a heads up, on Saturday the 20th and Saturday the 27th, you're going to get to enjoy these two gentlemen as they re-enter the studios for live shows. You've lined up a couple guests, though, haven't you, Greg?
We're working on it.
Working on it.
Yep. I think we're going to have a couple of good shows.
Okay. Excellent. So
we're saving all our good material. That's what it is.
That's right.
I don't want to waste it on this show.
Wow. Wow. Wow, look at the time. Don't you have to go? No, really, don't you have to go?
Yes.
Diane and I will be doing some traveling. We have family out in Duluth, Minnesota, and we try to go out every summer, which is July the 20th. That's their summer. Right up till then, it could snow at any point, and right after then, it could snow at any point. Goodness, what an environment they live in. Thank God for global warming, because it's so much better out there. I think they only got 6 or 7 feet of snow this past winter, and I think at one point they were below zero for 28 or 29 days in a row, and that's after global warming. Thank heavens. So we'll be doing a little bit of traveling, and Greg and Mark will be in capable hands. And I say that because I know John will be here.
John says he's going to put at least a 2-minute delay on the show.
At the very least. And for all our loyal listeners, there are quite a handful of you that help out and make the ice-breaking phone calls and ask good questions, make sure that you're available for those couple days.
And we're going to reach out to our clients and just make sure they're all prompted with softball questions.
So what is a mutual fund? Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
That's one of Mark's clients. Okay. So what does IRA mean, Mr. Grillo? Okay, that's
my wife to call several times.
Better not be your daughters. Your daughters are way sharper than that. They would be teeing up some questions that you guys, your brains
They'd
would
be
explore.
putting us on the spot.
Hannah and Abigail.
Abigail, correct.
Now, did you guys call her Abigail or is it Abby?
When she's in trouble, she gets the Abigail.
The middle name comes out. Right. Just the full name.
Yes.
Yep, in there.
But ironically, her middle name's Adams. Oh. I made that up. Sorry. Welcome to More Than Money. If you were with us in the first hour, you already know that we are putting this show on electrons. For your edification, we're just a few hours ahead of schedule, but we're still experiencing the Friday decline in the market and the Friday great jobs report. 226,000 jobs created. Fantastic. And for those of you that are fans of President Trump's economic policies, you have more evidence right there. So welcome. If you have questions, even though we're not in the studio, all three of us have access to our smartphones, and you can ask us questions at any time. Gene, G-E-N-E, at askmtm.com. Mark, at askmtm.com. Greg, at askmtm.com. Speaking of Greg, sir, did you want to follow up on our last segment?
I did. I just thought I'd just dovetail off Mark's article that he just discussed. And, you hear it. Being in this industry for years and years, when the market is in a bull run as it is, most people feel that they can invest on their own.
Sure.
There's very few bad choices that they can make unless things turn south, which they normally do. But I applaud the people who actually reach out to More Than Money and actually do want to schedule a second opinion. Mm. Even if they're determined to remain self-directed and continue to invest on their own, just having an unbiased second pair of eyes or just someone who can they can bounce their strategy and just a discussion, I think that's very helpful. But the folks who have those life changes, the divorce, the death in the family, the new child, the college tuition payments coming, I just applaud those people who actually take the effort to reach out and ask the question.
Very good.
And I think that kind of opens the door to a very, very good conversation and a good meeting because they reach out to us because they do feel in their hearts that we are here to help. There's no axe to grind. There's no products to sell. Mm. And those are the very, very good people to meet with.
Yeah, they really are. And folks like that, when we have a discussion about whether they will become a client or not, part of the decision, of course, is on their part. Part of the decision is on our part. And folks are quite often surprised to find that we accept about half of the folks who come through our door. They are, I think, very surprised, especially if they've talked to salesmen, especially the annuity salesmen. If you have a pulse, you can stay upright during a 15-minute meeting and you can write a check, you are their prime client. They are very happy to accept anybody that fills those three check boxes. On the other hand, we are slightly different. And the litmus test that we've developed, I know I use it a lot. I think you guys do as well. As folks say, is there a minimum account investment we must have? The answer is no. How do you decide? It's if I meet you and I think you and I are going to be together for 20 years. That's all I need to know. If you happen to have a small balance account or a large balance account, if you're going to be here 20 years, I'm happy either way. If I'm not that happy about the first 20 minutes of the meeting, again, doesn't matter, small or large account balance, it's not a relationship that we're going to pursue because we pursue relationships. And that's why we become such good partners with our clients because they know that in our heart, the relationship is the number one priority, the strategies, the ideas, the investments, the tax planning. That's all part of the process to get us to the number one, which is we want to be together for 20 years. And why would somebody stay with us for 20 years? Because we cared about them. We gave them obviously good investment returns. You got to have that, of course, but great service, and we cared about it. If you are listening to More Than Money and you have a question, send me an email, gene@askmtm.com or mark@askmtm.com or greg@askmtm.com. Mr. Mark.
Hi.
Sorry, didn't mean to wake you.
How are you?
What do you got over there, sir?
Greg's ringing the bell on me. Great.
I'm sorry, your time is up.
Thank you so much.
We have some nice parting gifts.
One of the things that we had kind of touched on a little bit just recently with reasons for potentially needing assistance with financial advice, but also we had talked about beneficiary designations.
Yes.
Just a quick note, whenever there's major life events, to make sure that not only your will is updated, but also your beneficiary designations are updated as well. Because they are two entirely different things that people often overlook. The example that I always give, maybe not the best example, but kind of hits the thought home. Met with a gentleman, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, had gone through a pretty tough divorce. We were going through financial profiling and came across, the question we typically ask is, do you have a will? And when was the last time it was updated? He said, oh, yeah, got that done. Went through the divorce, made sure it was changed right away. Got my ex-wife out
replaced.
As a beneficiary.
Replaced.
So I said, well, did you change your beneficiary designations on your 401k? He said, well, no, because I went through everything with the will and everything's set. And I said, Yeah, that's actually not the case. Your beneficiary designations in your 401ks and your IRA actually supersedes your will. Needless to say, he left, made a quick phone call, and wanted to get that updated.
I don't want that point to slide by. I want that point to be really, really highlighted. The word supersedes is, I usually use that at McDonald's. So for a lot of folks, thank you, John. Thank you so much. For a lot of folks, what that word, the import of that word is may be lost unless we're really, really clear. If your will says 100% of everything I own goes to my second of three children, A, B, and C, B gets everything. My will says that very, very clearly. My beneficiary designation on my 401k says it's equal A, B, and C. My IRA beneficiary says 100% to C. My life insurance contract says my ex-wife. My annuity contract says someone totally different. My will has nothing to do. It is invalid.
Right.
Because all those beneficiary designations, all those beneficiary actions will happen first, and the will happens second. So if, as in the case of this gentleman, if you're, hey, I'm all buttoned up because I changed my will, my guess is anywhere, what would your guess be for the clients that we service? Mm-hmm. What percentage of their assets from 0 to 100 are directed by beneficiary rather than by will?
A large portion.
Way more than half.
I'd say, I was going to say maybe 60, 70%.
Easily 60 or 70%. And if you're listening out there and you're going, really? Hang on a second. What is likely your largest investment asset?
401k,
403b. Right. And if you're retired, maybe it's your IRA. Both of those are beneficiaries.
Well, even those who still have pensions.
Oh, indeed.
So
all of those beneficiaries, life insurance beneficiaries. Now, this is a word of warning. If you say I recently did my will, but I didn't look at my beneficiaries, you have got to sit with all those accounts and carefully go through them either yourself or with assistance. You've got to do that. It's a word of warning. It's a word of caution. But it can also be a very good thing. Because very often our clients will come through, they've read an article. Probate is a dreadful thing. Okay, in my opinion, it's not necessarily, but it can be. So to avoid probate, you have to do one of these living trusts. You have to go to an attorney. You have to spend thousands of dollars. Not necessarily. All of the beneficiary designations we just discussed avoid probate. So for the vast majority of our clients, we just agreed 60, 70, 80% of their assets are in accounts that are directed by beneficiary. That also means 60, 70, 80% of their assets never go through probate. Not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good stuff. I was about to announce the phone number, as I too often do, talk about muscle memory. All right, most of my muscles are between my ears. Thank you. Right. Jeez. Gene at AskMTM.com, Mark at AskMTM.com, Greg at AskMTM.com. Greg, what do you got on your list there, sir?
Well, actually, it's interesting. We talk about emails from clients during the course of a show, and I actually did have an email.
Excellent.
And the question was regarding an individual who is leaving their job, retiring, they have a pension with their employer, and also a 401k component. And the question is, what should I do with my pension? Should I take a lump sum distribution and just roll that into an account, or take the income for my life? What are your thoughts there, Gene?
No surprise, it depends. Mm-hmm. No surprise. No surprise, it really is driven by the client objectives. So what are your goals? if one of your goals is to maximize the amount of guaranteed income that you can possibly get, then leaving it in the pension is an option. It's an option. Typically, and I know both of you have seen the same kind of spreadsheets or matrices that I have. Typically, hey, here's your pension. You can either take a lump sum or you can take this amount per month. Or you can take a different amount per month and leave half of that then to your wife. Or you can take a different amount per month and you can leave 100% to your wife. Or you can, and the client's head starts to explode already. There's too many options. There's too many choices for them to get their hands around. So we have to start with, again, back to hour one of fundamentals of retirement planning. What do you need income-wise every month so you're happy, you're healthy, and your bills are paid? And if the answer is, pick a number, $3,500, and your combined husband and wife Social Security happens to be $3,500, do we need additional guaranteed income to meet our goals? Not particularly. Not particularly, especially. That made any, okay. Especially not particular. All right. Now I'm getting nervous. I should be nervous. I'm looking to John for grammatical counseling here. This is the wrong direction. It is incredibly important that we understand that if we've already met our goal in terms of monthly income, if we then go, oh, what the heck, I'll take the pension, and you and your wife, sadly, your time has come, and the good Lord calls you home, that lump sum disappears. You got one monthly pension check, and $500,000 disappeared into thin air. So if you have children, grandchildren that you love more than the pension company, how odd would that be? Pension company, my kids, about the equal. No, of course not. If you have enough cash flow, enough income to meet your monthly needs, then selecting a guaranteed pension, in my opinion, is one of the worst choices to make, because you have voluntarily raised your hand and said, when my wife and I are dead, I couldn't give a crap whether my kids get any of this money. And I rarely, if ever, meet anyone that would make that choice. That kind of makes sense?
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, one other interesting way to look at it is, so once you lock into the pension, you're locked into the pension, right? But a pension is essentially an annuity, meaning the pension payouts. Right. So you can select to take the lump sum, and at any point in time, put yourself right back into a guaranteed stream of income.
Sure.
But the interesting thing is that, so pensions, it's 100% decision. And this is kind of the wrinkle here.
On off switch.
Right. So if you take the lump sum and decide at some point in time you want to have that guaranteed future stream of income, it doesn't have to be all of it.
Ah, you can customize it.
Right. So let's say that the expenses are the $3,500 a month and your Social Security is
$3,000. Yeah.
Making the decision to take the income stream from the pension, you're all in. So if you're getting a stream of a couple thousand bucks a month, if you need less than that, because that's too much income, too bad. If you need more than that, too bad. Taking the lump sum, backing your way in and saying, I've got a gap of $500 a month. What do I need to put into an annuity based on the age you are at which you need to make that decision? Because, again, taking an annuity at 62 versus taking an annuity at 75, two very different things, two very different benefits. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's another way to look at it. It's having – I always – my recurring theme in my meetings is making sure that you maintain the highest percentage of financial flexibility.
That's very good.
That
the
you
word
can.
Irrevocable
yep.
should strike fear in the hearts of most people. Irrevocable trusts. Mark has spent a fair amount of his career in financial services dealing with trusts. And the word irrevocable quite often comes back to bite people in the butt. An irrevocable pension designation or selection, especially under duress, is almost inevitably the wrong choice.
Right.
So having the flexibility of saying, I'll take the lump sum, I'll walk away from their guarantees knowing that I can always create my own guarantees. And quite often, the guarantees that investors or clients can create on their own are better than the ones that the pension funds were offering.
Well, especially on the death benefit side, too, as you were talking before.
Because you can elect a death mm-hmm. benefit on your annuity, where on the pension side, not so much.
Sure can.
Folks, three segments in the book. Natalie Merchant, is she singing? She's going to sing soon, though. Well, that would qualify as soon. Voice of an Angel says we're going to take our quick break, and it is a quick break. So don't go too far away. When you return, Mark Belsack, Greg Grillo, Mr. Gene Dickinson, we will be here as we finish our segment. Thank you so much. Very, very good. And for those of you that are just joining us, we're breaking the bounds of time and space, and we are with you on Saturday morning, even though this particular conversation has occurred just a number of hours earlier. So hopefully it's something that you're picking up some good ideas with. And if you need more information, send me an email, gene@askmtm.com or mark@askmtm.com or greg@askmtm.com. We're back after this on More Than Money.
I'm giving for your kindness. I made debt to you, and I never could have gone this far without you.
But welcome back to the home of explanations, More Than Money. Gene Dickinson, your host, Mr. Mark Belsack, Mr. Greg Grillo in the studio with us, breaking the bounds of time and space, putting a show on electrons so that you may enjoy it in the future. It's like Orwell in 1984. It's just too spooky to even talk about. It's hard to explain, but let's just soldier on, shall we?
Okay.
If you have questions, email works really, really well because phone's not so well this morning. Gene@askmtm.com, mark@askmtm.com, greg@askmtm.com. I have an email. Gentleman writes, I'm retiring in just a few months. I have a home equity loan with a $47,000 balance at 5.5%. Should I keep this for the tax deduction or pay it off? Any strong thoughts on those two choices, gentlemen?
I mean, obviously, working a little bit more with a financial profile to see what else they have.
Sure.
The amount of assets that he has, if he's got, did you say how much in assets he has or no? It was just
nope, simple. Okay. Just, it's like he doesn't even pay attention.
Yeah.
It was three sentences. Exactly. Let's assume for a moment that he has the available cash to pay off the line of credit. His question is, does he pay it off or does he keep it so he gets a tax deduction for the payments?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, obviously, knowing more about his specific tax circumstance, the recommendation would be to sit down with one of our tax advisors mm-hmm. to see what that's going to mean. I mean, they can put together a mock return for him.
I don't really think mocking the gentleman is the right way to go, but okay.
Okay. Well,
now, where I would start is slightly different. I would say for very specific reasons, never keep a loan for the tax deduction. Mm-hmm. A tax deduction is a fool's errand. People go, I need my mortgage because I get a tax deduction. First of all, you don't likely get a tax deduction because now the standard deduction is so high that the vast majority of Americans measured in the 80% range standard deduction. So you get the same deduction whether you have a mortgage or don't have a mortgage. Let's assume for a second you do get the deduction. Yippee. You get a 30% deduction or a 30% tax bracket, which is very high. Most people are not anywhere close to the 30% bracket. But let's say you are, and you write a $1,000 check and interest to your bank, you save $300. You're still out a net of $700. As opposed to you pay off the the mortgage. You don't get the tax deduction, which means it costs you $300 more in taxes, but you kept the $1,000. So you're ahead $700. It's a $1,400 swing. So keeping a note, keeping a payment, keeping a quote-unquote deduction, bad idea. Plus, depending on what other, Mark's point, very, very good, depending on what other assets he may have, if he's got some growth assets in the stock market, et cetera, paying off a line of credit at 5.5% is like earning 5.5%, in this case, on $47,000. If you're sitting with money in the bank, earning a 0.0 or even a 1.0, or even if you've got the best gig in the world, 1.5, it's still costing you a net of 4%. If you pay it off, you save all that money. Now, not all borrowing is equal. Mr. Gregg, you've bumped into a situation where the borrowing is very different.
Correct. Recent interaction, but there has been a theme along these lines where folks who, let's say, are either in some sort of debt situation, whether it be credit card, home equity line, whatever it might be.
Sure.
That or the fact that maybe they have poor credit and they can't get loans of some sort, maybe to make a purchase.
Sure.
The question comes up, is it a good idea to access and tap into my retirement assets for that purchase, for paying down my debt to put me in a better situation? So not only with a traditional IRA, but even the questions come up on 401ks, if there's an opportunity to take a loan against a 401k or borrow against that. So would like to get your thoughts.
Well, let's be clear. Traditional IRAs are not eligible for loans. So we take that completely off the table. Pensions, typically, not eligible for loans. That's off the table. So now we're down to 401ks, 403bs, that kind of plan, the savings plans. In general, the risks that people run borrowing money from a 401k are hidden from them until they come back to bite them in the butt. Pick a number. They have a $400,000 401k. They borrow $50,000 for a car, for example. If they borrowed it at the dealership, it might have cost them 5, 6, 7% interest. They thought they were getting a good deal in the 401k because they're paying 2 or 3. There's two things that most folks don't acknowledge when they borrow money from a 401k. Number one, the interest rate that they're paying is quite low. Translation, their retirement savings is guaranteed to grow at a very low rate of return. If they're in a reasonable time frame, reasonable in my mind is 10 years or more until retirement. So let's say they're 55 years old, planning on retiring at 65, and they're borrowing money at an artificially low rate. That means for the next 10 years, they are getting an artificially low rate. If they had properly invested their money, diversified, well-managed, people keeping an eye on it, like trusted financial advisors, they should likely get, pick a number, 5, 6, 7% return, where on the loan that they've taken out, their personal loan against their 401k assets, they might be paying 2, 3. As a result, they're losing potentially 4 or 5% return on a lot of money for a long time. In my opinion, that's something that most folks don't think about. They think very short term. They're not thinking long term. Second issue, the risk is, and again, it's in all the paperwork, but they may not acknowledge, if you change jobs, either voluntarily or not so much, hey, we no longer need you, you must pay back that loan immediately, or it's considered an early distribution, assuming that you're under 59 and a half, you got to pay tax and penalties. That's really painful.
Right.
Not a direction I would go, given any other choice. Certain circumstances, what are you going to do? Gene at AskMTM.com. You're listening to More Than Money. You've got Greg Grillo. You've got Mark Belsack. Mr. Mark, what you got down there?
One of the interesting things that I've come across is really perception when having conversations with clients. And it's very different as depending on what age bracket you're in. So, and I'll kind of give the example, and maybe we'll kind of, it'll be a decent segue, but it's when you're looking at the volatility or the movement of your retirement assets, looking at it from the standpoint of percentage increase or decline versus dollar value increase or decline, right? So everyone's going to view things very differently, but I think it's important to look at both ends. And here's the example. So if I were to tell you that your portfolio went down 5% versus if I told you that your portfolio went down $25,000, as people are approaching retirement, they may say, well, you know, 5%, that's a small percentage. It's not a big deal. $25,000, that could potentially be a year's worth of income.
Oh, sure.
The reality is if it's a $500,000 portfolio, both numbers are the same. But it's the perception in how to look at volatility and going back to being a defensive-minded strategist and protecting you in all environments. It's making sure that there's an understanding that makes sense to your audience. And that's what we try and do.
That's a very good point. And one of the corollaries to that, I would suggest, is when we counsel younger clients. So the folks who are listening out there, they send their son, their daughter, their grandson, their granddaughter to us, and they start an investment program. And they have managed to save $800. Fantastic. Maybe as a young person, that's quite a substantial sum of money. And we invested for them, and now it declines 5%. $40. For the average young person hearing that, they're going to go, it's $40. For goodness sakes, last Saturday night, I spent more than that on land sharks. It's not a big deal. If they can, at an early stage in their investment career, get to tolerate those kinds of percentage ups and downs because the dollar amounts are so small, it will serve them very, very well in their financial future. When they get to the $500,000 where 5% is $25,000, they go, it's only 5%. I've been through this before. I went down 5, but then the next year we went up 14.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yes, I've been down 8 and 10 and 12, but we've always bounced back. We've always had a good strategy. We've always got a good time frame, et cetera. So I think you're absolutely right. People need to hear both, so that they can make the appropriate choices for themselves. Because if they hear 5% and they go, that's not too bad, $25,000, and they fall off the chair,
right?
We've got to change something and change it quick. Mm. Because that's obviously, that's beyond their risk tolerance. Excellent point.
Right.
Well stated. Mr. Greg, what do you got over there?
Let's see. I have a question about 529 accounts.
Sure.
The question that was posed to me as well was, you know, clients saving for education for their children accumulated a nice sum of money for that education cost. Child receives a scholarship.
Nice.
Now you have money in a 529 that perhaps is not going to be needed for that child.
Sure.
So there's a couple of scenarios. Maybe they have multiple children. Maybe they don't. What happens to assets in a 529 if they're not used?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and it's one that the answer surprises a lot of folks who have invested in 529 plans. The options are far more diverse than people expect. The first observation I'll make is let's use real numbers. We have $100,000 saved in a 529 plan. This rotten kid of yours goes off and gets scholarships.
All that hard work funding the 529.
Precisely.
And they get a scholarship.
It's like they don't even think about how mom and dad feel about
selfish.
About just never mind. It's fabulous. One of the advantages built into the 529 plan is that scholarship equivalent dollars, let's say they get a $50,000 scholarship, you can withdraw that amount of money, no penalty. You will pay tax on the profit, as you should, but no penalty. That's a pretty neat kind of escape hatch for a lot of folks. Nice. Most folks, they're not interested in getting the money back in their pockets. They're interested in, again, benefiting the student or benefiting their family in some way. That's why they set it up, because they're wonderful people. One of the options is don't do anything. There is no expiration date on a 529 plan. There's no age. Many other types of investment plans for kids have an expiration date. When they turn 21, it's their money. Come hell or high water. We don't care if they're dating a guy named Dog. We don't care. We don't care if their only accumulation in their entire lifetime is multiple tattoos.
He has a no regrets tattoo.
No regrets.
No regrets.
No regret. Right. Absolutely. Yes. At age 21, it's their money. They can do whatever they want. 529 plans, it's never their money until you say it's their money. It is your money. It's your account. It's in your name. You are the owner. They are the beneficiary. And oh, by the way, the beneficiary can be changed in a blink. So don't get all cocky over there, you little Schneider. So bottom line is there's no hurry. There's no urgency. And when a lot of folks understand that there's no urgency, we'll pick on your daughter now, Hannah. Mm-hmm. Wonderful girl. Hardworking. Bucknell, really good school. Let's say she happens to be the person who is, this is the scenario. We have more money in the 529 plan than we need. Hannah's 20, 21.
20.
20. So the thought that Hannah is going to be a mom is something you better not let happen.
Very, very far off.
Very far off. But say 10 years. If that $50,000 that we have in the if that $100,000 we have in the 529 plan is untouched for 10 years, it could reasonably be $200,000. That would be a 7%, a little more 7% mm-hmm. return. It could reasonably be. So let's just say between $150,000 and $200,000. And Hannah says, hey, Pop, you're going to be a granddad. All you have to do is change the beneficiary from Hannah to grandchild, and you have started your daughter's daughter or son on a tremendous footing. Because the money has been cooking for all that time, and it just passes to the next generation. The other thing that could happen, Hannah goes into a profession that requires continuing education. Continuing ed in almost every case is a qualified, approved distribution from a 529 plan tax-free. And that can continue. And then ultimately, if somebody says, look, they didn't need it, my grandkids don't need it. I'm 90 years old. There's 300 grand sitting over there. You can always take it back. There is a penalty, a 10% of the profits penalty. But so what? If you need it, you need it, it's yours. Great. 529, a lot of options, a lot of cool design stuff.
Well, on that same note, let's say, you know, a child gets the scholarship. Let's just choose a profession. Let's say you're a teacher. And you decide that you want to kind of venture into a different curriculum. Maybe you want to work for the board, or you want to be an advocate or something, and you need a master's degree for that. And you going back to school, you can always repurpose the 529 for yourself.
100%. You are absolutely correct. The other thing that happens, and this happens, can happen more likely with parents who set this up. Greg's a perfect example. She'll be a junior this year?
Yes.
Okay. He's a young man. Everybody's snickering here, but he's a young man. So let's just paint the scenario that Hannah doesn't need it. Abby doesn't need it. And 5 years from now, Greg says, you know what? I want to shift my financial services career into being more on the supervisory side, the Series 24 side, and getting all those kind of designations that you have to be a OSJ, he could change the beneficiary to himself. And now granddad can end up using some of the money tax-free as well. So a lot of different ways to I was going to say skin the cat, but generally speaking, my three cats do listen to the show. And it just, they hate that. They hate that. More Than Money, you've got Gene Diggison. You've got Mark Belsack. You've got Greg Rill. You've had that, all three of us for nearly a complete two hours. We have 8 minutes or so in this edition of More Than Money. If you have questions that you would like to have answered, but obviously we're not taking calls this morning, send us an email, gene@askmtm.com. You can do the same with Mark at askmtm.com, Greg at askmtm.com. Jeez, you can't do them by mail order. You have to buy them direct. Greg at askmtm.com as well. And check out our website, morethanmoneyonline.com. We've got lots of great stuff going on there, including live. Oh, my gosh. Live podcast. Yeah, that would be fascinating. That's not to mention totally wrong. We have podcasts of our radio shows, and if you missed any part of today's show, if you check in on Monday, Mr. John, through the miracles of modern technology, will have sent that to Ms. Megan. She will have posted it on the website, and you have access to all of our radio shows. Back to the recorded, the start of recorded history of civilization. I know. It's very impressive. Mr. Mark, what do you got down there?
A lot of talk about retirement planning, a lot of talk about wanting to put the focus on the amount of income that you need in retirement. Really ties in nicely to our retirement planning software. It's called Journey Guide.
Very nice.
And that's essentially how it works. The end result is you give us the amount of retirement income that you're looking to generate. And, of course, we help you figure out that number because it's not something that you kind of walk around with on the top of your head. And the end result of the plan is to give you a probability of success.
So let's be let's just step back a little bit and describe the scenario.
Sure.
Folks who are either already retired, relatively early in retirement likely, or who are the light is not only at the end of the tunnel, it's halfway through the tunnel, or it's getting really, really bright. And they want to know with some degree of confidence
mm-hmm.
that their retirement is not going to be temporary.
Right.
Getting retired is pretty straightforward. Staying retired is what they're really interested in. So when we talk about software, what is the function of Journey Guide? What is the end result that if people walk in the room and then walk back out at the end, that they've got a smile on their face?
Whether you're on the path or you need to select a new path. The interesting thing about the software is that it's incredibly dynamic, meaning just like your life, events happen. Sometimes they're planned, sometimes they're unplanned. And you want to make sure that you're throwing as much into the calculation that you can to ensure that you have a high probability of success. I mean, that's the only thing with certainty is to make sure that we're looking at retirement, which is, you had mentioned earlier in the show, that it's, you know, there's certain things that you only encounter once. And retirement's it.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to make sure that you put your best foot forward. This Journey Guide, as the titling, can really factor in any number of life events, whether you're buying a house, whether you encounter a long-term care event, whether, you know, when's the right time to take Social Security, which is an entirely separate conversation that we can talk about, but it's ensuring that with everything that you've done to prepare for that event, mm-hmm. we plug it in, and because it's a dynamic tool, as life moves, we make adjustments in all of these different variables to ensure that we continue to be on that best path.
So, start to finish, mm-hmm. client walks through the door, it's 10 o'clock in the morning.
Sure.
This sounds like it's going to be a 4 o'clock in the afternoon exit. Yes? No?
No, it could be, but it's a fairly straightforward process. The questions that we'll ask are the typically the exact same questions we would ask at our first meeting.
So in general, what kind of time frame would most people expect?
I mean, if we're really having a good time, we can get it done in under an hour. Yeah.
So really straightforward, really mm-hmm. reasonable, a really reasonable investment of time to walk out knowing either you're on a path that gives you a 90, 95, 99%. Is there a operator?
That's the thing. Is so you plug in what you want, what you feel comfortable with as a probability of success. Now, personally, I think 95 is pretty strong.
Okay.
If, and I'm sure she's listening now, if you come in and you say, well, why isn't it 100? which has happened. It's just, I hate the saying, there's only two things in life that are 100% probable. Mm-hmm. But 95% from a statistical standpoint is about as strong as you can get. Some clients feel comfortable with a 90% probability, but regardless, it's whatever you want.
So we set a probability of success, and probability of success is that you live your entire life and you don't run out of money.
Sure.
So once we've defined that and mm-hmm. once we've set that up, the reality is that you can run, hey, what if I take Social Security at 67, or what if I take it at 70?
Right.
So it's a number of what ifs and some comparisons.
If I retire and let's say I get a part-time job and there's an extra stream of income for another 5 years, because retirement isn't, everyone always views it as an end-all be-all. It's not. Mm-hmm. You don't retire and then you sit in your lawn chair and kind of watch the leaves blow by. No, some people work just in a different capacity, something they enjoy. How many clients do we have that just take their passion and make a career out of it?
Absolutely.
So lots of things that you can factor in every possible scenario. We plug into the equation and we see what's what.
Fantastic. And for that was a cross between clients and folks. For cloaks who would hear that and go, that sounds like exactly what I would like to have done. I want to know that we're either on the right track, or I need to know what to fix so that we can get on the right track. How do they do that?
Reach out, make an appointment, and we can begin that conversation.
Any cost?
No.
Okay. Folks, 2 minutes left in this edition of More Than Money, which means we got to wrap up with a couple ideas for you. First of all, thanks to Greg.
Thank you, Gene.
Thank you, Mr. Mark.
Very welcome.
A lot of fun. I know you guys took time out from your days, but that's what you do. So it's fantastic. So I'm really glad that you're here. We've answered a lot of questions about a lot of things. A lot of it's centered on retirement, of course, because that's kind of a lot of the focus of our client issues. But we covered a lot of ground on a lot of topics. If you're hearing any of those topics and saying that's my question too, or if you're just hearing the topic of confidence in retirement, I want to retire confidently. I want that second opinion on my current scenario, my current investments, my current tax posture, my current 401k, my current debts, my current whatever. Those are exactly what we refer to as free second opinion meetings, and they're absolutely free. Whether you become a client or not is a very different question, because that's really a function of whether you fit and we fit you. So if you're interested in securing a free second opinion meeting, gene@askmtm.com. Or go on our website, morethanmoneyonline.com, or you can go old school and you can call us to the More Than Money World Headquarters, 610-746-7007, 610-746-7007. Thanks for spending part of your Saturday with us. We'll be back with you next week on More Than Money. I'm giving.